Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
That is right. It's a Monday Ask How to Money episode where we field questions from our listeners. We might even have a question or two in here from people who don't listen to the show. They just happened to run across our website and saw, oh, I can ask a question. But if that's the case, then they won't actually hear their answer. So I don't know how that works out.
That's a conundrum right there.
They have to listen now that they've submitted a question. But yeah, man, I'm looking forward to getting to our five questions today. We have one about just hanging with friends on the cheap. Now that we are getting back to our social lives, what that looks like and how you can do that on the cheap. We're going to get to a listener who has a question about helping his parents with their money. And we're going to talk about if it is possible to contribute to both an HSA and an FSA. And not only is it possible, but then does it make sense if that's an option available to them? So I'm looking forward to those questions plus two others today on this episode, buddy.
Sounds good, man. It's a good lineup. But yeah, before that, I wanted to mention...
What's this subscription service you've got here?
All right, so I tested something out. I wanted to give it a shot because my wife's dad, my father-in-law, his wife... told me, hey, we've been doing one of those meal kit delivery services at home, and we're loving it. And I was like, all right, sounds expensive. Sounds like not my jam, but...
you get some sort of cut.
Tell me, yeah, exactly.
why are you trying to sell me on this?
I was like, but tell me more. And, you know, it did sound like, yeah, for them and their lifestyle, they're digging it, and it's worth the money for them. But it sounded like something I would never do.
Right.
Just, we're traditional grocery store folks, man, and then like making our meals the old-fashioned way. But she had some sign-up thing that I could test out for free. We could literally get three meals in 1 week for $9. Like all you had to pay was shipping.
That's pretty sweet.
I was like, three meals for $9? That's cheaper than we could do it for any other way. So we'll give it a shot. We'll give it a go. And so we tested it out.
Well, are you willing to say which company it was? Or are you trying to avoid the name?
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. It was HelloFresh.
Okay.
And to be honest, it was a really good experience.
Nice.
I was like, this is, for $9, three full-fledged meals that our family was happy with. And my wife loved it because she loves kind of how all the ingredients are kind of packaged and given to you, because neither she or I are incredible cooks. Unlike... you and your wife, you guys have some serious culinary chops.
And by me and my wife, you just mean Kate specifically. Yeah. I mean, she handles all the cooking. She loves it.
She could literally open up her own restaurant and succeed.
I think she could.
Yeah, she could.
And if it wasn't for her, I would literally just be eating. Like at this point in my life, I would just be eating to survive. Like some people say that, no, I live to eat. No, I eat to live. Like that's where I am right now in my life.
Yeah. Well, so we tested this out and the food was great. It was super chill. Nice to be able to make it like that. And definitely worth the not so expensive gamble of $9.
Well, $9
to test it out.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, that's not the normal price for a week's worth, right?
Right?
Or,
so
or
then
three meals at least.
The normal price, as it turns out, is closer to $35 per meal. So you're talking
Holy
about $100 a week.
That's a lot more.
For those three meals.
Yeah.
And that's something that we're like, cool, glad we tested it out. Glad we got the super cheap meals. But no, we're not going to keep doing this. But I totally understand why some people are into it now. Because, yeah, it makes cooking a little bit easier. It helps maybe get you out of some of the ruts you're in with the stuff that you're cooking. But at the same time, I'm like, I can't justify that kind of money.
No.
You can't justify that much a week for three dinners.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, I mean, do you tell them how many members are in your family? Because,
yeah.
Okay, so you can tell them how many portions you want if you were to sign up.
Exactly.
Like long term. Gotcha. Because my family of six is going to eat more than Emily's dad, like than they eat. And while you're able to get the cost down to $3 per meal, which is, yeah, crazy cheap, it's clear that that's not the ongoing price. And this is, again, one of those subscriptions that people can fall into. And they're paying for, a service, something that they may or may not need. It might be something that they're into for a while. But then in reality, I bet maybe some of those meal kits kind of build up. They have a whole cabinet full of meal kits. But I bet there's some folks who don't even want to put that much work in. And then they just end up going out to eat at a restaurant. We just want to make sure that folks are being intentional with the money that they're spending. Right.
You don't want to let that food that you just got spoil. Right. Go
no.
bad. But yeah, it was worth a shot. And I'm glad I now know what those meal kits entail. I get it. I understand why people like it. But just not for us. We're not ready to spend that kind of money on it. And I will say, too, I love the idea of being able to test something out for super cheap. I'm always up for that too.
Oh yeah,
like or using one of those services and taking the initial deal.
Yes.
But always just be ready to make sure that you don't, you know, submit your credit card information.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask. Did you have to submit your credit card information in order to take part in the free trial and then cancel it?
Exactly.
Oh,
yep.
Okay. So there's the catch.
Set
right?
that calendar reminder. Make sure you know you're canceling at the appropriate time before you start incurring, those charges, those ongoing charges. And so I was ready. I was like by my computer.
It.
I was like, I am not paying $100 for three more meals to come next week. I'm going to cancel on time.
There you go, man.
Yeah, that's definitely an important thing to note. But Matt, let's move on to the beer. The beer we're having on today's show is by Cascade Brewing, and this is a Creek, which is a sour ale with cherries. So looking forward to having this one, and we'll talk about this beer at the end of the episode. But for now, let's get on to listener questions. And anybody out there who has a money question, we would love to hear from you. You can go to howtomoney.com/ask and submit your question, and hopefully we can feature it on an upcoming Ask HTM episode. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask to do that. But let's get to our first one, Matt, and this one is about the downsides of commuting.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Joel. Been loving the podcast. Just discovered y'all in 2021, so big basket of episodes to listen to. I live in Denver, so big beer fan. Two of my favorites are Station 26 Tangerine Cream Ale and Andy Gator's Double Bock. Anyway, I'm currently listening to episode 20 and am on my 120-mile commute to Buena Vista to shoot x-rays at the prison. I wanted to ask if this job is worth it. I make $23 an hour and get mileage reimbursement at 58 cents a mile. I charge 245 miles round trip and have a cool deal with the warden of getting 12 hours no matter how long it takes. My take home each week is $373.40 for one day of work a week. I hate the commute, but I do use that time to listen to my favorite podcast, or two, How to Money. New best friend out.
By the way, Matt, that question came from James. I don't think he said his name at the beginning, but yeah, what do you think? Is he an honorary best friend? Honorary member of the, you know,
hey, James, best friend's out. That's our thing, buddy. You can't say that. No, you are an honorary member, especially if you're going to listen to How to Money for that long, that consecutively. like 4 hours every single, or no, 4 hours once a day is his commute. But even still, that's a pretty serious level of commitment.
My mom wouldn't even do that.
No, yeah, I don't know if I would even do that. But this is my job, so I do. But James, we do appreciate that you're listening to our show. And by the way, you mentioned episode 20. That was all about why commuting is killing us, and you know how we should all work towards shorter commute times, both for health and money reasons. But we are at least glad to hear that you are getting reimbursed for the miles that you drive. That isn't the case for most folks. And if you're driving an older vehicle, you could actually be making money on that drive, which isn't too shabby. It sounds like you're getting paid slightly higher than what the IRS recommends for the reimbursement rate per mile. And, you know, it also, too, depends on what kind of car you're driving. Because if you're driving like a BMW or an Audi, you're not going to be coming out ahead because those vehicles take a lot of money
unless
to maintain.
A 1996 BMW, then you might be doing all right.
And you get good gas mileage, right?
Right.
Yeah. But it's also helpful that you only have to make this drive, like we said, once a week, not 5 days a week. There's a big difference between fighting traffic daily as opposed to just doing this once a week.
Yeah, most definitely. And part of it, too, is like the traffic that you face. I don't mind a long drive as long as I'm not stuck in traffic. And in Atlanta, usually you're stuck in traffic. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to a standard 9-to-5, you're going to work when everybody else goes to work, and you're coming home when everybody else is. But with what James has going on here, it kind of sounds like he's leaving probably maybe even before the morning commute starts, and he's coming home after that afternoon commute.
Right.
And plus, I'm sure it's not as bad as it is in Atlanta. We have to make sure that we're looking at this from your perspective, not just our perspective, since we live in Atlanta where the traffic's terrible.
Yeah, the only other places, I think, in our country that can... that can understand what we go through here are probably like LA and Seattle.
Yes.
Those are like two bad ones too. But yeah, let's cover a few important questions to James that you need to ask in order to know whether this job is worth it or not. How long does it usually take to get the work done? I think it's a really important question, and you didn't really say, but like, let's say you mentioned that you're getting paid for 12 hours, but let's say you're only working 8 on average. And so, yeah, that's a nice situation to be in, right? Like, you're still getting paid for the full 12, but only really working 8. And this really bumps up your hourly rate. But let's say your work days are typically 11 to 12 hours long. Well, then you're really only making the, you know, $23 an hour that you've agreed to. So either way, you're still taking home that $373 a week, but it's good to know how much time this job is requiring of you, because that helps inform the decision. If you're getting paid for double the amount of time that you're actually spending, that drastically changes the equation here.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's important to know what your time is worth. That's another question we feel that you should probably ask yourself. We talked about how to figure out your hourly rate back in episode 99, but that is crucial information that you need in order to make an informed decision. Most of us don't really consider how much our time is worth. And then we'll end up saying yes to things that we shouldn't say yes to. And then, you know, we might say no to things that we actually should. And this doesn't just apply to decisions about traditional work, but also, you know, you can apply these same principles to other activities like DIYing repairs around your house that might need to be made, or even spending time looking for discounts. It all kind of comes down to knowing what your time is actually worth in order to make an informed decision.
Yeah, like for instance, we talk about doing your own pest control. And for us, you'd have to make a lot of money to make it worth it to hire somebody else to do your own pest control, because it is so simple and it doesn't take very long.
And it's incredibly affordable to do it yourself.
Exactly. It saves so much money. But if you made enough money, I guess you could easily justify hiring someone to do that. But it all comes down to a numbers game. So let's talk about that. Here's how you calculate your hourly rate. And yeah, it's 40 hours a week times 50 weeks, assuming a couple of weeks off, which equals 2,000 hours a year. So let's say a $50,000 salary. Let's like base it on that.
Nice round numbers.
Yeah. Divide that by the 2,000 hours. That comes out to $25 an hour. But for most folks, getting ready for work and then the commute, right, that you're going to be partaking in actually brings down that hourly rate. You're spending more time and resources towards work than you think you are. I think, Matt, people need to go into this equation with eyes wide open. They need to actually calculate, well, how long does it take me to get ready in the morning? And how long is my actual commute? What are these additional costs that are eating into my hourly rate? So yeah, the same $50,000 salary is now only paying $21 an hour when you factor in kind of the commute time and getting ready for a lot of folks. So yeah, having that clear data can help you to make an informed decision. But really, if you're not looking at the numbers, then you're kind of just guessing and you're like grasping at straws. And so we want you to have like a little bit of firm information about your hourly rate before you decide like, yeah, I'm going to quit and I'm done with this. Or actually, no, it makes sense for me financially to keep doing this.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's not to say that your emotions and what you want to do aren't important. You need to weigh those factors as well, but it's also really important to have solid data. And James, you know, one other question too is we want to know how your finances are overall, right? Because, you know, the goal is to not have to work for money at some point. Like someday you might want to retire. We talked about this recently, or even to be able to work less and own more of your time. But getting there also takes quite a bit of time. And so it's important to assess your finances just overall and see how they would hold up without the income from this specific job. You know, we're talking about almost $1,600 a month in income that you'd be losing. But if you can afford it and this isn't something that you like doing, right? You talked about how you hate the commute. Well, then, you know, quitting this for lifestyle reasons would be understandable. And one other thing, too, it's important to see whether or not you can maybe find some more gigs that pay similarly, that are just closer to where you live there in Denver, so that you don't have to, you know, take part in this nightmarish commute where you're driving 2 hours one way. It's one thing if you actually enjoy that time. If for you, you're able to kind of like, maybe even like, I don't want to say that you should zone out while you drive, but like find peace. Like if you're able to drive and kind of like, I don't know, if you're like in a state of zen, and whether you're listening to podcasts or an audiobook, or you just are enjoying that time for yourself, then I think it's a completely different question, right? But yeah, if you are not enjoying that commute, then I think there are a lot of other potential options for you.
Yeah, man, I think too, there is something powerful about leaving money on the table. When you could take it, but you say, I don't need it, and my life like is more important than this job. I think that there's something really good about flexing that muscle when you're in the financial position to do so. If you've saved well enough, if your monthly income is still more than enough to cover the bills and to allow you to continue to save and invest, then you can say, James, actually, no, I'm not going to do this job anymore. I don't need it. Yeah. And it's not worth the toll that it's taking on my physical health in order to continue working here. My mom recently, Matt, just has asked her boss if she can go from 4 days of work a week. She works like four 10-hour shifts, or probably more like four 11-hour shifts.
Right.
But and she's trying to go down to three workdays a
week.
And I think that's so great, like where she's at. One, they've gotten to the place financially where they can afford to do that. And she's getting close to those retirement years. It's going to allow her to extend her working life. It's going to be able to prevent some of that burnout. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, when you can turn down money, when you can dial things back a little bit because you've created the financial ability to do so, I think that's a good thing. And you should take advantage of that when it makes sense.
Nice. Yeah, man. Well, congrats to your mom too, right? For being in a position where she can kind of dial back the number of hours that she's working, kind of slowly maybe turn off that income, that, you know, income for worked hours spigot. And James, we hope that eventually you will also be in a place to where that's an option for you. So James, thank you for that question and we wish you the best of luck. Joel, we've got a couple more questions to get to, including that one about just some different ways of hanging out with your friends without having to spend a ton of money. We'll get to that one plus a few others right after this break.
All right, we're back. Later on in the show, we're going to get to a question about how to help your parents as they're reaching retirement age. That's a really important question for a lot of our millennial listeners right now, Matt. But before we get to that, let's take that question about hanging out with friends without spending too much money.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Anu, also from Atlanta. Now that things are opening back up and we're starting to see old friends and meeting new friends, what are some creative ways to hang out that aren't just sitting down to eat at a restaurant or getting coffee? Because I'm sure you know from a frugality standpoint, those activities can add up pretty quickly. And yet it almost seems like you're going against the grain and being unconventional if you suggest anything otherwise. So curious on your thoughts. Thanks so much. Bye.
All right, Anu, thanks so much for that question. You know, coffee. Going out for coffee, spending some money on a nice caramel latte. That's a favorite of mine. I enjoy doing that. And I also enjoy going out to a nice restaurant from time to time.
I bet you like avocado toast too, Matthew,
actually,
don't you?
I don't mind it. It's not like, it's not like something that we do frequently, but it has been nice getting back into restaurants. It's definitely something that I missed doing as much back when the pandemic was affecting our economy the way it was. I missed being able to eat in a restaurant, and I'm glad I can do it again. But they really can get expensive. We, you know, a few weeks ago, we talked about how folks have resumed what they're spending in service sectors like restaurants and bars, while at the same time maintaining how much money they're also spending on groceries. And hopefully folks will adjust their spending in coming months. But I say that because restaurants can be expensive. And for some folks, I think it could also be just repetitive and boring if they're not being thoughtful or creative about it, right?
Let's go to another restaurant again.
Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah. Oh, we could probably put some more things into our repertoire, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. This isn't to discount small business, especially small local restaurants, right? Like some folks are really into food. And they follow their local chefs. They follow when they're going to open a new restaurant. I would put Kate in that category. She's really into that. But if you're not being intentional with that money that you're putting towards those restaurants, and when it becomes like the default option, that's what we're trying to avoid here. And that's when it can really get expensive because it's not something that you are truly valuing. We want to make sure that you're spending your money in ways that truly matter to you.
Yeah, so really when it comes down to it, there are so many options besides just doing those two things. And,
yes.
And it can become, like we just said, the default. But I think sometimes what it takes to get out of that rut is that Anu might have to become the instigator with her friends to actually consider changing those habits. And I do think it can become a habit. It's like, let's do brunch on Saturday again. And it's like, cool, we did brunch last week. And then actually on Wednesday, we went out to dinner too. And
stand around in line for an hour and a half. Like,
yeah,
that sucks, in my opinion.
But it's a habit that you have to break. And so I think the idea, Anu, that we would suggest is to go be the fun ringleader who makes other fun activities happen. You kind of have to be the energy that gets your friend group going. And so, yeah, a couple of maybe my favorite suggestions would be a picnic at the park. Look, it's still food related, okay?
Yeah.
You can still do lunch or dinner. And since Anu is in Atlanta, Matt, I will mention, on top of the new parking deck at Grant Park, it's a lovely place to picnic.
Oh, so, it is. Yeah. Yeah, nice little field. Nice. There's actually tons of fruit trees. So maybe you can even just show up. Don't bring your own food. And you can just eat the blueberries and whatever else is blooming. There's service berries up there, actually, too. Those are like these. Sorry, I won't go into all of this.
Hey, free food. There you go.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
So that's one option. And also, you could play games up there, like spike ball, or there's just all sorts of different, like, you bring a cornhole set. Bike rides is another great thing to do as a friend group. taking a hike, like exploring, getting outside, going for a walk, going for a hike is a great friend group activity. Board game night is something that Matt and I love. We don't do it as much as we used to, sadly, but it is definitely still a super fun activity with friends. And then porch beers, or, you know, a morning homebrew coffee on your porch. Like, you don't even have to go out. Like, you can have that same interaction with your friends doing it in person, but not actually going out to a place where you have to spend money in order to have fun.
Yeah, especially with it being summer. I mean, one of the things that our families did a good bit last summer, especially given the pandemic and there weren't as many activities that we could participate in, but we found all the different state parks, especially the ones that have lake beaches.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's $5 well spent. You know, you just load up the car. And
you get a full day's worth of activity,
yes,
out of that.
And you pack your own food, you pack your own drinks. In my opinion, that is definitely money well spent.
And we mentioned recently how city pools are free this summer.
Right.
So Anu, hit those up too.
Another great way to stay cool, yeah, the Chattahoochee. Yeah. You could spend some money on a tube and go floating down the river. That is a ton of fun. But I mean, basically, I want you to think through some of the different hobbies, the different things that you enjoy, and just try to get your friends to do those things as well, right? It doesn't always have to cost money. Like, even the most expensive, like, sports or hobbies, like I'm thinking about golf, right? Golf is probably like the most expensive thing that you could probably think of,
especially if you go to Topgolf,
to get into. But that's the thing, you don't have to join a really fancy club, and you don't even have to go to Topgolf, where you're going to be tempted to, you know, buy drinks and stuff like that. You can just get like a pitching wedge, go to a park and just kind of like chip around and have a beer. Even like tennis, like you don't have to join a club where there's like really nice tennis courts. There are lots of free public courts.
That's true, yeah.
Everywhere. And so just finding ways to incorporate some of that physical activity. Again, I know it's hard, like especially in the summer when it's hot, which is why it's good to have some of those water options, but finding ways to encourage your friends to just engage in some of the different activities that you enjoy as well is a great way to save money.
Don't forget disc golf. There's some good disc golf courses too. Yeah.
That's right.
But like, I think ultimately going against the grain is a good thing, right? You don't want to be the person that says no every time your friends want to hang out. That gets old and you begin to feel not so good. But you also don't want to upend your financial plans and hurt your ability to save and invest and work towards those long-term goals that you've got, Anu. So make sure to allocate some money in your budgets so that you can occasionally say yes to something you might otherwise say no to. You can, once a month, maybe prioritize going out to dinner with some friends or getting that coffee at a coffee shop with somebody, but also work to change those friend group habits. I bet a lot of your friends are actually going to be thankful that you're prompting them to do some really cool activities that they might not otherwise have considered. And I bet pretty soon you guys will be finding yourself doing just a lot of cool stuff around town that you haven't really noticed before existed.
Essentially, we want you to talk about money, because Anu, you said it feels like you might be going against the grain if you were to talk about this, but you never know. Everybody might be feeling the same way you do, but yeah, it just takes like the one person to be a little kind of courageous and to kind of step up and be like, hey, well, let's talk about money a little bit here. This is really expensive. I don't know if this is the best use of our money.
Yeah, they might all breathe a collective sigh of relief. Like,
oh, thank you. Yeah, finally.
I was going into debt trying to keep up with all our dinners out.
Exactly. Yeah, everyone's trying to save face a little bit. And so I think it's important to engage in healthy communication about money, not only with your friends, but especially too, like as you have a romantic partner and were you to get married down the road as well. But having healthy ways of talking about money is really important. And if you want to kind of think about it that way, this is sort of like a trial run to talking about money, finding ways that make sense for you to engage in your personal finances, so that down the road, it's even easier. And then at that point, you'd be able to engage with your partner, within these money conversations even more effectively.
Yeah, nice. All right, well, I like that. And yeah, Anu, best of luck finding some really cool activities around town. Maybe we'll see you on the disc golf course. All right, and Matt, let's get to our next question. This one's about using tax-advantaged medical accounts.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Jenna from Utah. I have a question about HSA and FSA contributions. I currently max out my HSA every year, and our family is fortunate to not have any major medical issues. My husband and children are also double covered on his low deductible health plan. I was wondering if it would be smart for me to set aside some FSA dollars as well in addition to the HSA dollars. We could use the FSA each year to buy little things like their copays and a few things at the grocery store. Thanks.
Jenna, the fact that you are maxing out your HSA every year, which, by the way, that's your health savings account, is awesome. And it even sounds like you are doing your best not to actually tap those funds and actually using those funds for any medical expenses, which is the best way to use an HSA.
Round of applause. Right. Come on.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Done.
So, yeah, if you can continue to let that money sit there within that HSA and then, you know, not use it, make sure that it's invested so that it can compound for future medical expenses decades down the road. And not just future medical expenses, but actually being able to reimburse yourself for medical expenses in the past, and you're actually drawing on money within the HSA for you to actually live off of.
It's like time travel way of investing. It's so cool. I love the HSA.
I've never really thought about it that way, but it is like time travel a little bit. And so by using that strategy, that could turn those contributions into a massive amount of money that you can tap into later in life.
Yeah, so let's talk about contributing to both, Matt, because, yeah, there's good news for Jenna, besides the fact that she's already, like, you know, taking full advantage of these accounts and hopefully investing inside of that HSA. You can, Jenna, contribute to an HSA and an FSA in the same year.
And an FSA is a flexible spending account.
Right. And those accounts are specifically geared towards people who are going to, they're going to put money in. They're going to say the year before in 2020, hey, this is how much money I plan on spending on medical expenses next year. And that money does not get taxed. But then you have to use it pretty quickly, right? You have to use it in the year that you've allocated it for. And that's one of the downsides to FSAs. But what I like about being able to do both is that you can essentially separate that money into two different buckets. One is for current year medical expenses. That's also getting a tax break. And the rest of that money that's going into the HSA is for future years, like you said, potentially decades down the road, that you can invest. So good news, you can do both. And thinking of those as kind of separate buckets, separate ways of using your healthcare dollars, I think is kind of a good mental way to approach it.
Yeah, so it's not only mental, but it's physically separate, right? And so it's just a nice way to kind of account for those funds in different ways. But Joel, it is important, just like you said, for Jenna to make sure that she only puts money into her FSA that she knows that she's going to be spending that year, because FSAs work on that use it or lose it basis. So, you know, if she contributes money that she isn't able to spend, it's going to vanish.
That's the worst part about the FSA.
That is,
because you're making
easily,
a guess.
Easily
you're,
the worst.
And for most people, they can, you know, reasonably accurately guess what they're going to spend.
But you never know.
But you don't know.
Yeah. What if you're just so frugal that you don't end up spending that money?
Gosh darn healthy.
Exactly.
You don't have to use it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, some employers will allow you to roll over, you know, like $500, or they might give you a 3-month grace period the following year. Or you could, you know, just stock up on FSA eligible items like sunscreen, ibuprofen, Band-Aids, stuff like that. But I love the goal of getting as many tax-free dollars as you can, Jenna. Maximizing those accounts is just a smart money strategy for sure.
Totally. But let's talk about one last thing that Jenna mentioned in her question. She mentioned that her family, most of her family, is double covered with her husband's healthcare plan that has low deductibles. And Matt, we don't know the specifics of what the premiums are, but yeah, assuming that this is an employer-sponsored plan that's a benefit, maybe those premiums are completely covered. We know of some incredibly generous Atlanta companies that tell their employees, you don't spend a dime on healthcare. We're taking care of all of it.
Completely covered.
Which is super generous, because healthcare is crazy expensive. So, if that's the case, Jenna, if your partner has just one of those rock star healthcare plans, then that's great, being able to have both. But if he's actually paying a good chunk of his paycheck every pay period towards the premiums for this plan, then it's worth asking yourself, like, what's the actual benefit that you're receiving by keeping both plans in place? You said that you have a healthy family, so it could make sense to pocket that extra recurring expense, and you could use it to beef up your emergency fund, or, you know, use it to handle, you know, medical care costs this year, right?
Out of pocket,
exactly.
Essentially. Yeah, as she builds up to that larger deductible in case there was something that was really expensive.
Yeah,
right?
So we don't know their specific situation, why they have these two healthcare accounts, but just something to think about. Like, what are the costs of it, and are the benefits outweighing the costs? It's something you should consider.
Yeah, I would, in this case, I wouldn't call it a double coverage. Maybe just think about it as potentially redundant coverage, because this might be coverage that you just completely do not need, and you might be able to save a lot more money every single month.
Yep, totally. All right, we got a couple more questions to get to, Matt, including where to put money when you plan on buying a home in the near future. We'll get to that and more right after this break.
All right, we are back. We're taking listener questions. Joel, our next question is from a listener in the Windy City, and he wants to make sure that he's approaching helping his parents think about their money in a way that helps them and not harms them.
Hey, Matt and Joel. My name is Jacob. I'm in Chicago, and I love the pod, so thank you so much for all of your wonderful insight. My problem is that I have two parents. They are divorced, and they live in completely opposite sides of the country. I'm in Chicago, my dad's in Denver, Colorado, and my mom's in Baltimore. And they are fantastic people. They spent all their money raising me. And unfortunately, I can see the writing on the wall, which is that as they approach retirement age, they are going to need more help from me. And I want to do my part, and I want to be ready to assist them because I know they don't have much in the way of savings. My father is very lucky because he is selling his home in Denver. My mother is going to stay in Baltimore for the near future, and it's possible I might try to get her to move into my home in Chicago with me when she can no longer take care of herself. But in the meantime, I'm trying to figure out the best way to help her pay off her debts. She has a mortgage. She has a car payment. And she has credit cards that are each maxed out at about $2,000. So that's maybe $4,000 of credit card debt. I'm tempted to pay off her car because then that debt's gone and she can apply her car payment money to her credit cards, even though the credit cards have higher interest. But if I pay off the credit cards, then I know she's more likely to just charge them up again. So is it better to pay off a car, which is a permanent debt gone, in favor of giving her money to pay off her high-interest credit cards every month? Or is it better to pay off the credit cards because they have a higher interest rate? Thanks so much. Looking forward to hearing from you guys. Have a great day. Bye.
All right, Jacob, awesome question. And Matt, I got to say, I sympathize with Jacob because it's a really tough thing to try to help your parents with their money. But it's even harder to try to do it when you don't live in the same town. Like when you live hundreds of miles away, it means Zoom calls, phone calls, text messages, yeah. Maybe even.
Yeah, when you're not involved in the day-to-day, right?
Yep. So yeah, Jacob, kudos to you for continuing to work towards helping your parents, even though it's not easy. But yeah, it's also obviously a good time, like you said, for your dad to sell a home in Denver. Big props to him for that. And it sounds like, yeah, both parents have decent housing plans in the future, so that's good. But honestly, your willingness to help your parents in such a meaningful way is admirable. And I think that as kids, like we owe that to our parents because, like Jacob said, they spent a lot of money raising him. Our parents spent a lot of time, effort, money raising us and caring for us. And I feel like as kids, it can be harder for us to return the favor sometimes.
That is true. Yeah. So let's talk more about how you can help your mom, right? It sounds like her situation is going to be the most difficult here. And here's the thing. I wouldn't pay off any of her debts without having a couple of really important conversations first, right? Because like you said, paying off those credit cards might help temporarily, but you might charge them up again. And I know that's how you're kind of laying out the problem and how like paying off the car might be a more permanent solution. But the thing is, she could always go and finance another vehicle. And so either way, it doesn't really matter. You want to make sure that you're having some healthy conversations with her and that this is something that y'all are talking about, regardless if you choose to help her or not. And so essentially, you're just going to have to enter into a few of these discussions with her about the state of her finances before committing your own financial resources to help her.
Yeah, because if you don't, your finances could be at stake, right? Like you could be pouring money in what you think is in her direction and what you think is a kind, generous move. And from your heart, it is, but ultimately it can end up hurting you in the process and hurting your future financial standing.
Yeah, if you're not addressing the root of the problem, then it could be a lot of time and money poorly spent.
Right. So it'd be kind of like you're in a boat with a hole in the bottom and you've got one of those like 5-gallon buckets and you're trying to get the water out, but like ultimately you're not making any progress because the boat is still sinking because you don't have enough duct tape to fix that hole in the bottom, you know?
It might keep her afloat for a little bit, but yeah, you've got to address the actual problem, which is the hole in this case, or in her, you know, specific to her case, it seems that her spending is kind of the problem here.
So what's the financial duct tape here, Matt? That's the question. The duct tape that would have fixed the boat, but Duct tape doesn't really work on that like that, I don't think. But
you need like some putty or something. We obviously know a ton about boats.
Right. Well, you probably actually really need like some wood and some nails, right? That's probably what you need.
Some Play-Doh.
And a tugboat to get you to shore. But really, when it comes down to it, you need to get buy-in from your mom in order to make, you know, whatever plan you have to help her fix that debt to turn it into a reality. So you have to create a plan together. And I would suggest putting it in writing at the same time, because it's really hard to go back and be like, but mom, 3 months ago, I said this. Well, if you have it in writing, then you can both kind of be working from the same shared Google Doc or whatever, right? That you can both pull up whenever you want to. But at the same time, as you're kind of making these plans together about how you can help her with her finances, how she can get her finances together on her own, and then with your help, you know, accelerate that plan, you want to get her excited about how quickly she's going to be able to get rid of this debt if you're able to do it together. And I think that's a huge part. Sometimes people need some motivation and they need someone to partner with them in towards making positive financial progress. Going it alone is really tough. We know that in so many areas of our life. We need community support. We need the help of a loved one. We need someone who cares about us to put their arm around us, come alongside of us, and really help us get going. And it sounds like that might be what your mom needs. Doing it together also ensures that she's on board, right? That you're not just trying to help her out where she doesn't have any intention of changing her current habits. So you trying to fix her finances solo isn't going to be good for either one of you, and ultimately it's actually going to really hurt you in the process.
It could damage your relationship, right? Yeah. And I think one of the ways that you can partner with her too, Jacob, is that like this is your mom, right? And so you know her and you probably know what's going to truly motivate her, right? And so if, for instance, if she's like a numbers kind of nerd, then yeah, like make a spreadsheet, like show how by eliminating some of these debts, like what that's going to do for her future. But considering the fact that she does have credit card debt and that she does have this car payment, I'm guessing like she may not be quite as analytical when it comes to the numbers. And so maybe for her, that means appealing to her emotions. Talk about stress and how much stress is going to be gone from her life when she no longer has these credit cards, when she no longer has a car payment, but instead has a reliable paid off vehicle. Find ways so that you'll be able to make lasting and effective change. So Jacob, make sure that you do that first. But you know, beyond that, then it truly is a numbers problem, right? Like you've addressed the emotions, you've addressed the spending, you've addressed the root of the problem. Then it truly is. It's just a math problem and it's really simple. If you're just looking at the numbers and you have the financial ability, yeah, paying off the credit cards is what would really help the most because those interest rates are going to be the highest. But again, that can only be done if she's willing to, you know, legit put those cards in the freezer. You want to address that spending. And you know, in the end too, I know that it can be tough to talk to your parents about money. It can even feel like the roles are reversing a little bit, that they're shifting. And so, you know, we talked more about how to have these conversations back in it was episode 114 with Cameron Huddleston. She talks a lot about discussing finances with your parents. And so if you haven't listened to that episode, we'd recommend for you to go and check that one out.
Yeah, she wrote a great book about that, about how to approach those conversations, how to start to talk to your parents about their money as they get closer to retirement age. And it's a great, helpful book. And that conversation was really great too. So Jacob, best of luck as you try to navigate these waters with your mom. And I really believe that you're going to have some success here as long as you're not trying to do it all on your own. You got to partner with your mom in this to make progress. But Matt, let's get to our last question of the day. This one comes from a recent college graduate who's trying to buy a home in the next couple of years.
Hi, Joel and Matt. I'm Maddie. I'm 23 and I'm from Houston, Texas. I just recently moved back in with my parents in the Boston area to save money for graduate school. I'm going to be getting my master's in marketing in England, and I will be paying for my degree in cash. Thankfully, I don't have any debt for my undergrad or otherwise. Your podcast has helped me gain so much confidence when it comes to money, and I've actually found a love of finance, credit cards, and saving as well. Thanks to your podcast and some luck and hard work, I've saved around $70,000. After paying tuition, living costs, and visa fees, I'll have about $40,000 left, and I plan to stay in England after to find a job. Fingers crossed. I wanted to know what you guys thought would be the best way to grow this money over the next 2 to 3 years while I'm away. I won't need the money, and I plan to also work while studying. I hope to put a down payment on a home in the UK in the next 2 to 3 years with that money as well. Thank you, guys. I'll be enjoying a beer in England for you, too. And if you ever come visit England, please reach out.
Maddie, nice. Thanks so much for that question. Hey, when you get over to the UK, make sure that you check out Cloudwater and the Wild Beer Company, because those are two of our favorites, favorite beer breweries from the UK. You know, there's Boddington's. You can skip that. Like, that's the Boddington's Pub Ale. I feel like that's a very approachable beer for a lot of folks. But if you're
going to get some hate mail from our British listeners for
that. There's nothing wrong with Boddington's. I've definitely enjoyed a few of those. But if you want to take it up a notch, then you can check out Cloudwater and the Wild Beer Company. Those are both some solid ones. But Maddie, we're just proud of you for paying for your degree in cash. That is just going to be awesome. And just generally speaking, you know, we're pumped that you are interested in money now, that you now have a love for personal finance. We're glad that the show has been able to do that for you. And that newfound interest is going to pay off in such a big way over the years. And also, we're not planning any UK travel soon, but we'll definitely holler if we make it across the pond. Maybe we'll take a little How to Money work trip.
Yeah.
You can write that off, right?
Right. Yeah, that's...
doesn't mean it's free.
Right. That's what how most people think of writing it off.
Though. Yeah, yeah.
And Matt, too, Maddie said she saved up $70,000 at the age of 23.
That's huge.
That's outstanding.
That's crazy.
And rare. Also with no debt to speak of, $0 in school debt. Like, what a great way to begin life, because a whole lot of her cohort is not in the same financial position, not even close. They have a lot of debt and have no savings on hand to speak of. And that just starts you behind the eight ball. It's tough to start life like that. And yeah, I got to say, I love too what Maddie said, that she's planning on working while studying. I'm a huge proponent of working in some capacity while you're in school, even if it's just an on-campus job. But that's one of those things that, in particular in modern times, over the last like 8 to 10 years, it seems like a lot of parents and students have agreed, let's just focus on your schoolwork. But I think there are so many other benefits besides just the income that you get from having a job while you're in school. I think it's a great thing for a whole lot of reasons. Also, it's getting you some of that work experience before you actually go out there and try your hand at a career. You've got something on your resume, and you've had to kind of like work with a boss. Those are all really helpful things to learn in your early 20s.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're able to find a job that's within the industry that you want to pursue, right? In some capacity. It doesn't have to be the exact role, but if you're in the same industry, I think that speaks volumes to your desire to learn and to pursue that specific industry. But Maddie, let's get to your question. You know, anytime we're talking about growing money that you will need, say, in the next 2 to 3 years, that is a tough question, right? You know, if you're able to extend your timeline a couple more years, like, we could suggest a slightly conservative investing plan. But when you don't have much time, there's just too much risk involved with putting your money in stocks. You could see that $40,000 that you're going to end up having after school, you know, you're planning to use that for a down payment, but you could see that money become, you know, $25,000, and that could massively affect your ability to purchase a home. It could massively impact some of your plans after you get that degree. And so were you to do that, you would be taking on a lot of risk.
Yeah, you're putting that capital, that money that you've worked so hard to save up, at risk if you decide to put it to work for you in the stock market. And at the end of 3 years, you might be sitting pretty. You might be in a better position than you would have been putting it in an online savings account.
Most likely she will be.
Most likely.
But
you can't take that risk, especially when it's money that's as important as a down payment for a home. And so, yeah, this is definitely a case where capital preservation is king. And, you know, CDs maybe would have been a better option than savings a couple of years ago. But at this point, there's really not much of a difference in payout between high interest online savings account versus a CD. You could still opt for a CD to ensure that if rates dipped even further, which feels like an impossibility, but I guess it could happen. I guess it's hard to think of savings rates going even below
even
where they are.
Lower, yeah.
Because they're so depressingly low at this current moment. But that would at least ensure that the money that you're making on your money stays the same over, you know, let's say a year-long period or two. But something else worth looking into is Series I savings bonds. You could put $10,000 of your money in there. That's the max that you are allowed to purchase in I-bonds each and every year.
Yeah, but right now that's sitting at around 3.5%. So that's actually a pretty sweet rate. And you mentioned the first year, maybe even like the second year too. So, you know, that next calendar year, maybe getting another $10,000 in there. But even still, you're only looking at half of that $40,000 that you're expecting to have.
And it's important to note that when you put your money in a Series I savings bond, you have to hold that bond for a minimum of a year. So let's say you did it next year. And then at the end of that year, you were like, I need that money now. You can't get it.
You might have to wait for a couple months.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, another option would be to invest in short-term government bonds, like through an index fund with a company like Vanguard. That's another worthwhile option for short-term funds that you just can't afford to see dip in value. But really, when we're talking about, in particular, like a two-ish year timeline, there's just not much else that you can do. Yeah. Really, you just got to kind of avoid risk.
Yeah, these are all good options. Definitely at least getting that at least that first year's worth of $10,000 in a Series I bond. That's a pretty great option for what you have. But all the rest of the options available to you aren't great. They're just good. And like we said earlier, yeah, this is about preservation of capital. You're not going to be able to grow your money a ton, but you might be able to grow it a little bit.
True. All right, Matt. Well, that's going to do it for questions. So let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode. While we were answering these questions, we had a Cascade Brewing Creek, which is barrel-aged sour with a bunch of cherries in there. So yeah, what were your thoughts on this beer, man?
Well, I will say, even though it had a bunch of cherries, so I'm reading the back of it here, and it says they have more than 16,000 pounds of Bing and sour pie cherries in this beer. Granted, not this one bottle, like over in the entire batch when they made it. Even though there are that many cherries in here, I feel like it's kind of light on the cherry flavor. And I think maybe one reason for that is that this is a 2017 sour. And so I've had experience with having some older sour beers where they lose some of their vibrancy. Like, it's still a good beer, right? Like, this is totally still a great barrel-aged sour ale, but this is specifically, you know, a creek. And when typically with a creek, you can taste a lot of cherry. I don't feel like we're tasting a whole lot of cherry in this particular beer. Do you agree or disagree?
I do agree. I think this one has a little more of like the vinegar tartness, and yeah, it's very, very tart. Yeah. But yeah.
Which I like. Again, I'm not complaining.
It's just like a different style than I was expecting.
Yes, 100%.
Agreed. And I prefer my creeks to have like be bursting with cherry flavor. And this one wasn't that, but it was still a really good beer. It just wasn't what I was expecting when I cracked the bottle open.
Yeah, so Cascade, they make, so, you know, we're sharing just a little small 500 milliliter bottle, right? So oftentimes they make some of these nicer beers in a big 750 bottle, and those bottles can often cost like around $30. And so the reason I know that sometimes you can lose some of that actual fruit flavor is recently I came across in the back of a liquor store here in Atlanta, they had a bunch of those 750s, which are normally $30 typically, right, for one of those nice bottles. They had them there for $5.99. And I thought, oh my gosh, I hit the jackpot. Nobody knows what these are. I'm about to score. I'm going to scoop all these up and take them home. But then I realized that the date on them was, I think they were like 2015 or 2016.
So even older.
Bottles, even older. And I thought, okay, they've definitely lost some of their edge. But I was still willing to go out on a limb. And I bought one of them, like the Sang Noir, which is like a really, really nice one. Took it home, cracked it open, poured it, and it turned out, yeah, it was pretty vinegary. It didn't have a whole lot of actual flavor, a lot of tartness, and in that one, there was hardly even any like oakiness left. It was just pretty sour. And so if you happen to be in a liquor store and you see some dusty bottles of Cascade, and you know, back on the clearance rack, it might be worth risking it if maybe they're 2017 or newer, but definitely I would recommend that folks avoid them if they're older than that.
Yeah, which is interesting because some of those beers that have been aged like this, they can do well on the shelf for quite a while, but I think particularly when there's fruit involved, you're going to be missing...
I guess that's it, yeah.
Some of those nice fruit tones that you would normally get if it didn't hang out so long and you drank it sooner. But that's going to do it for today's episode. We'll have show notes up for this episode on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And maybe this is the first time you've listened to How to Money. Maybe you're just like kind of sitting out by the pool, kind of looking through different ways that you can handle your money better, and you're listening to some podcasts. You found How to Money. We would love it if you subscribe to our show. We don't want you missing an episode. And if you are a longtime listener of How to Money, we would love it if you were to leave us a positive wherever it is that you listen to your podcast.
Yeah, if we've ever saved you a few bucks, leave us a review and mention that in the review, because
ooh, yeah,
people love hearing that this podcast is actually going to save you money. So if you found out a way to save on travel or a way to invest better,
yeah,
that you didn't know about before, put that inside the review. It just makes it more vibrant.
And I mean, it makes me feel better too. Like we're not directly connected to our listeners, but whenever we do get to hear from listeners and they tell us ways that they've been able to, you know, change their habits for the better, and they're able to save more money, that just pours gasoline on the fire that is How to Money.
Yeah.
And it kind of propels us forward. So thanks in advance for that. So Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.